Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Tuesday, February 24th. Anderson?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Dicaria?
Here.
Dockstader?
Here.
Esquivel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Honeycutt?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Larson?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Massey?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Nicholas?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Excused.
Schiffer?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Sessions?
Here.
Townsend?
Here.
Basie?
Here.
Von Flatern?
Here.
President Hines?
Here.
29 present, 1 ex... 30 present.
Reverend Furchin.
Good and gracious God, we give you thanks that you have brought us in safety to this new day. We ask your presence again in this place. Bless these men and women that what they say and do may be pleasing in your sight. Open their ears that they may truly listen. Open their eyes that they may truly see. Open their mouths that they may speak with integrity, and open their hearts that they may discern the common good. Give them the spirit of wisdom, that there might be justice and peace in this place. We offer these prayers to you, O God, trusting in your mercy. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, and approval of the journal.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 23rd, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day is Michael Jordan, MD from Newcastle, and nurses for the day, Tanya Lozero and Dorothy Seisenbach from Wyoming State Hospital. Thought for the day, choose a job you love and you will never have to work a day in your life. Concurrences? Mr. Vice President, are you ready on message 349?
I am.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 19th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 349, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 62, Discretionary Clause Prohibition Act. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 46, noes 11, excused 2, conflict 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 341, concurrence request, to Senate File 62, Discretionary Clause Prohibition Act, and ask the body to vote aye. What the House did was basically three things, some cleanup language, and essentially made discretionary clauses in private contracts and health insurance contracts, ban discretionary clauses in those. With regards to group health insurance policies, they allow discretionary clauses, but provide for de novo review, meaning a new review by the court, if a claim is denied. And that's really what we want in this whole thing. And so that, I think, ameliorates some of the concerns with the state health insurance policy. And then with regard to those insurance policies that fall under ERISA, they added some language that provides for a notice to the insured that the plan contains a discretionary clause and so forth. And you'll see that on page 2 of the concurrence request at the top of that page, page 4 after line 8, insert. And then you see paragraph B. That pertains to ERISA claims, and it has a notice provision to the insured about those ERISA claims. Paragraph C on page 2 is with regards to group health insurance policies that allows them to have the discretionary clause, but then also provides provision that the claim can be reviewed de novo within any court in the jurisdiction. The rest of the amendment is to clean up some language, but for all intents and purposes, that's the bill. It creates three parts to it. It works. It's a better product now, having those three categories. So I'd urge your favorable consideration of message number 349.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've been puzzling over this thing since it was passed out a few days ago, and I still have some questions and some reservations about it. First, on the ERISA, we're generally prohibited from regulating ERISA at all. Is there an exception that would permit this kind of regulation requiring a notice? And I don't know. I'm asking. Second, with the group policies, we allow them discretionary clause. Yes, there's a review de novo, but does that mean that you go outside the contract provisions? Because if the contract provisions contain discretionary clause, how can you get anywhere, no matter what you call the review? Or does a de novo review somehow go outside the contract provisions and just let the courts decide, well, this is a good thing or this is a bad thing, and legislate on their own? What's going on here?
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, with regard to the ERISA issues, whether or not it is doable or not that we can mandate to them that they have this clause in an ERISA policy is perhaps questionable. But there has been a case in Montana in which the insurance commissioner went in and has been ruled by the federal district court there that he did have the power in ERISA claims to decide discretionary clause. That is now on appeal to the Ninth Circuit. I don't know where that's going to go or not, but if that continues to prevail, certainly we would have the power to have we're not really regulating ERISA, but we're just basically telling they need to have a clause that informs their insured what the policy contains. With regard to group insurance policy, it does not allow in a de novo review. If you have a discretionary clause basically now and you go to court, they don't really get a de novo review of the claim because the discretionary clause is in there. And because of the contract language, they defer to the maker of the contract, in essence, the insurance company. This would basically say, okay, here's the confines of the contract, but by Wyoming law, the court can review it de novo, anew, whether or not it's compensable within the contract or not, and they can't stand on the discretionary clause in and of itself. That the court has the ability to go in and determine, based on the contract itself, whether or not that claim should be compensable or not. So it gets to the same result, but it gives some, as we started hearing as it went to the House, as this bill went to the House, there was some question about our state group health insurance policy and what would this do to it. Would it increase costs? Would it increase the bottom line to the state of Wyoming? There were some fears in there. This was kind of a halfway meeting place. It allows them to have their discretionary clause, but if, in fact, the claim is available or is made, the court gets to review it within the confines of the contract, all new. So I think it's a fair compromise, and it works for what we need to do, and this is a long, it's a great first step towards providing some consumer protection.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 62, Message 349, and you have asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 62. Mr. Vice President, are you ready on message number 347? Would reading clerk please read in the message.
February the 19th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 347, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate file number 95, medical necessity review procedures. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 347, concurrence request to Senate File 95, medical necessity review procedures, and ask the Senate to vote aye. Members of the Senate, the amendments that were added on really are linguistic for the most part. It does add some provisions that I will go into, but it doesn't change the bill as it went out of this House dramatically. With regard, there was, of course, the Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment basically went in wherever we saw the language that said an insurer applying the notification and appeal procedures consistent with ERISA shall be deemed to be in compliance with this section. Just took all of those. There was a number of paragraphs or sentences that were in there. Took those all out, and then they added a new subparagraph T that just says the exact same language wherever, so long as they comply within this section. So it's just a catch-all, and we didn't need then all of those sentences. What they did on page 4, there was an amendment that was added in the Senate judiciary, taking the a time frame, particularly when there is an emergency or life is in jeopardy or they're currently hospitalized or whatever, that amendment took 72 hours and took it to 3 working days. We went back to the original language of the bill, which is 72 hours. Testimony over in the House was that, including the Big Blue Company, that they have people on staff that can accept these claims and do accept these issues 24/7. So 72 hours was a better fit. And then you're going to see throughout the bill from the Speaker amendments that go in and talk about if there's a claim normally the bill would say is claim for medical services or procedures. He added in the language the provision of or payment for, so that there are various situations where you could really need the service and you're not getting it yet. And so they have this review, external review, to get the service. And then you also have the issue after the fact for payment when you've already received the service. So that is a good language. On page 7, what they did on the bottom in Romanet 2 was to add the language so that it reads, upon receiving a request for external review, the insurer shall, and then Romanet 2, assign the request to the independent review organization that has been approved by the commissioner for preliminary review, period. And then added this language, the insurer shall provide to the independent review organization all documents and information upon which the insurer relied in denying the claims under review. Failure to provide the documents or other information shall not delay the conduct of the external review, and then the external review organization shall, and it goes on to page 8. And on page 8, of course, you see in a number of places the language provision of or payment for. On page 9 of the bill, we added in additional language so that it says that the independent review organization shall, within 5 days, determine whether the documentation is complete, and then immediately notify the claimant and the insurer in writing that the documentation is complete, and if not, this is new language, and if not, which documentation is missing. On the bottom of page 9, we add in new language so that it would say that all documentation or other information provided to the independent review organization by the insurer or claimant shall be immediately provided to the adverse party. So they got to make sure they each have each other's information by the independent review organization. And then the insurer may use any documentation or other information provided by the claimant to reconsider the settlement of the claims. So, in essence, they just it's pretty much cleanup language, everybody seemed to all are on board with regards to the amendments, and I'd urge you to vote aye. This is, once again, the second part of this whole scenario, and it's a great step forward for consumers in the state of Wyoming.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 95, Message 347, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt? Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 95. Senator Burns, are you ready on message number 351?
Yes, Mr. President, I am.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 6, Wyoming Arts Council Revision. Reference House Message Number 351. Signing for the House, Representatives Childers, Brown, and Conley. Signing for the Senate, Senators Burns, Honeycutt, and Massey.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence message number 351 dealing with Senate File 006, Wyoming Arts Council Revisions, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. Chairman, when the bill came for concurrence, frankly, I confused what it actually, with what we thought it did to what it actually did do. And upon conference with the sponsor of the second reading amendment that the Senate put in, we decided to basically rescind from the non-concurrence that we did before. Basically, what the House amendment did was it allowed the Wyoming Arts Council to nominate two people for the let me get it straight so I don't mess it up here again, for the Cultural Trust Fund Board, which is not nearly, frankly, as important as the Wyoming Arts Council. And so I would ask the body to go ahead and vote for the conference committee report, and the tall senator from Laramie asked to remind that I remind everybody that he was right in the first place.
The motion is that the Senate do, excuse me, Senator Larson. Not entirely. What the amendment basically did is accepted most of the amendment that we put on it here, but not the back part, and as it is left, it's okay. But it's a lot better than it was before we put the amendment on. The motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Number 1 to Senate File 6, message 351, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross. Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on Message 351 that reference Senate File 6. Reports from standing committees.
February the 24th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 114, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 24th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 211, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, and Landon. No, Senator Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman. February the 24th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 267, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Bills on the second reading. House Bill 41, second reading of the House Bill.
Cremation expenses.
House Bill 41, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 42, first reading, second reading of the House Bill.
Burial arrangements.
House Bill 42, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 71, second reading of the House Bill.
Film industry financial incentives.
House Bill 71, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 83, second reading of the House Bill.
Governmental immunity, public transportation.
House Bill 83, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 91, second reading of the House Bill.
Public building fire and electrical plan review.
House Bill 91, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 92, second reading of the House Bill.
Long-term care partnership program.
House Bill 92, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 104, second reading of the House Bill.
Special district elections, polling place requirement.
House Bill 104, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 156, second reading of the House Bill.
Energy Performance Contracting 2.
House Bill 156, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 190, second reading of the House Bill.
Driver's License Suspension, Child Support.
House Bill 190, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 225, second reading of the House Bill.
Bighorn Sheep, Ewe, and Lamb Licenses.
House Bill 225, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 252, second reading of the House Bill.
Wyoming Retirement System Hospital Participation.
House Bill 252, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 289, second reading of the House Bill.
Child Protection Hearings.
House Bill 289, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 291, second reading of the House Bill.
Small Business Investment Credit.
There are amendments. Would the reading clerk read in amendment number one?
House Bill number 291, second reading amendment number one to engrossed copy, page 15, line 9.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 291. Mr. President, what this does, it goes in on page 15 on line 9, where we start talking about the decertification, which is dealt with over in Wyoming Statute 912.1210C on page 30 of the bill. And instead of making it a two-year window, it makes it a four-year window where any of those credits, if it doesn't come into play, it's a four-year window to take those credits back if it doesn't, if the loans don't come into play. It then goes on and deletes, obviously, subparagraph 2, which is lines 15 to 20, because it covers that four-year window. The purpose of the amendment is to make this program a little bit stronger in terms that we want to make sure these venture capital loans, that those companies come out and have 4 years up and running and functioning. So often, these types of companies struggle the first couple years. We want to make sure that they're up, that the state really is getting a benefit. And if we lengthen that window, they'll have 4 years' experience versus 2 years of experience. That's all it does.
You ready for the question on amendment? Second reading amendment number one to House Bill 291. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment has passed. Reading clerk, read in the second amendment, please.
House Bill 291, second reading amendment number two to engross copy, page 9, line 15.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment to number two to 291. Mr. President, members of the Senate, simply in addition to what we added yesterday in amendment, there was an understanding we'd have the Wyoming State Banking Commissioner as part of that. And this is simply adding that to the mix of those who would be considered. And ultimately, if this is a bill that would help us help small business and diversify the economy, this is an important individual to be a part of the process. I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Question is on second reading amendment number two to House Bill 291. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Reading clerk would read in amendment number three.
House Bill number 291, second reading amendment number three to engross copy, page 14, line 9.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is provide protection for the existing uses of this premium tax. There's three other premium tax credits out there. One is where they have to support the life and health guarantee fund. If there's an assessment against companies, they can deduct that against the premium tax. Another is to support the Wyoming uninsurable pool. Third is the Wyoming small group insurance, the reinsurance pool there. And the fourth item is a provision that the 50% of the premium tax from the fire insurance go to support the volunteer fireman's pension fund, which depended on that. And those are the, I reviewed this with the insurance commissioner, those are the four other uses that we can find. What this does is says those uses have priority, and you've got the last sentence in the amendment calculated using the gross premium before any credits from this, because otherwise we would particularly hit the fireman's pension potentially. So that's what this amendment does, is protect those existing uses.
Question on amendment is second reading amendment number three to House Bill 291. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Message passed. House Bill 291 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 297, second reading of the House Bill.
Simple assault.
House Bill 297 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Joint Resolution number 2, second reading of the bill.
Adequate funding for I-80 as a critical freight route.
House Joint Resolution number 2, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. House Bill 198, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 198, sponsored by Representative Anderson, Wheat Marketing Commission Assessment, and Act relating to the Wheat Marketing Commission, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Vasey.
Yes, Mr. President, I apologize to the body that I wasn't better prepared on this bill yesterday. I made some assumptions, and they were false assumptions. The good senator that asked to lay this back was exactly right. This is a tremendously important bill. There is a commission called the Wheat Commission. They do research, marketing, and utilize and promotion of these projects. They came to the legislature by statute they can levy a penny. They asked for 2.5 cents, so they asked for an increase of 1.5 cents. And then to get this done, I suppose next year they'll have some wild idea like they want to pay for their own health insurance, but we'll deal with that when it comes. And the other assumption I made was that the good senator that asked these questions, I always had great admiration for his knowledge of things agriculture, and I just assumed that maybe the answers were already known. But I do apologize that I didn't. But there is a handout on your desk, and I hope these answer the questions that were brought. One was producers are free to request a refund of any portion of the assessment up to 100%. This may be done up to 90 days after the assessment is deducted. Since the commission was founded in 1972, no producer has requested a partial refund of an individual sale, but several producers have requested and received refunds on a partial sale, but these same producers have not requested refunds on other sales. So that is, they can do that. They haven't used it much, but they can. And number two, on the out-of-state assessments remitted to Wyoming will be refunded upon request in the same manner as any in-state assessment under House Bill 102 passed the House and Grove Act 12 of 2007. Wyoming collects assessments on wheat originating in states that base their assessments on where the wheat is sold rather than on the state where the wheat is grown. Currently, Wyoming collects assessments on wheat produced in Nebraska and Kansas under the provision of this law. Wyoming elevators collect the assessments for Montana, Colorado, South Dakota, and Idaho, and all other states having wheat assessments, and remit these assessments to the appropriate state. In turn, elevators in these states remit assessments collected from the wheat produced in Wyoming and remit these assessments to the commission. That law that was referred to in 1138-108, assessments generally, any grower who by virtue of his activities or circumstances is within the meaning of the term handler is therein defined, or who shall sell, ship, or otherwise dispose of wheat to a handler or other person or store the wheat outside the jurisdiction of this act shall forthwith remit to the director the full amount of the assessment. The new language in 2007 said wheat originating from any state that collects a similar levy upon wheat but bases assessment upon the location of the first sale taking place within its jurisdiction shall be treated as if the wheat were grown within the state of Wyoming being first handled by a Wyoming handler. At the first commission meeting following July 1st of each year, the commission shall determine which state collects a similar levy and shall then notify all domestic handlers of the state. So I hope those answer the question, and I'd urge support of this bill.
Are you ready for Senator Myers?
President, Mr. President, yes, this answers the questions I had, and I guess be careful of the questions you ask for. You'll get the answers.
Are you ready for the question? House Bill 198, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon? Larson,
no.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing, vote closed, 26 ayes, 4 noes.
House Bill 198, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 198 have passed the Senate. House Bill 287, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 287, sponsored by Representative Philp. Helium Property Tax, an act relating to taxation and revenue, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Are you ready for the question? House Bill 287, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout? Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Coe,
no.
Cooper,
aye.
DeCaria,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
no.
Hastert,
aye.
Honeycutt,
no.
Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson, Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
no.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 21 ayes, 9 noes.
House Bill 287, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 287, have passed the Senate. House Bill 288, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 288, sponsored by Representative Lockhart, Certificate of Authority, High Voltage Transmission Lines, an act relating to utilities, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 288, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 288. Members of the Senate, the other day, the last couple of days, we've had some good discussion about this particular bill. And I bring this amendment to you in the spirit of compromise between some concerns that all of us had relative to private property, yet recognizing the importance of trying to have some transmission lines being built to take power out of the state of Wyoming. Mr. President, if you look at this amendment on the bill, in the title section we add providing rulemaking authority, providing a definition, then we've added two additional subsections, H and J. Mr. President, what these subsections do, H It says, notwithstanding subsection F, which was already in the existing bill of the section, the commission, Public Service Commission, may establish by rule and regulation a procedure which would allow construction of transmission line segments before right-of-way has been acquired if, and this is the compromise, Mr. President, notice has been provided to all private property owners along the entire length of the proposed line, and the commission provides an opportunity for private property owners who are affected by the location of the segment, an opportunity to be heard concerning the location of the segment. It further goes on further, Mr. President, to define line segment, and it means is the portion or length of transmission lines which is constructed between substations or switching stations within state or federal land, within the jurisdiction of a local government entity, or between certain power, tower, or pole structures. And, Mr. President, there was an interesting article today in the paper about what the federal government is thinking about doing relative to transmission lines. Once again, Washington's going to tell us how to do it better out in the state of Wyoming. I'm concerned a little bit about their movement. I think this kind of a bill really sets up an interesting, good framework for what we do and how we treat this issue in Wyoming. One of the good news about that, of course, is that the BLM will now be looking at more corridors to allow the transmission lines to be built on the BLM land. With this kind of language, I think we afford the opportunity for private property owners to be able to, when they look at these segments, possibly move them off private land where there's a huge impact to now federal lands, which I believe, as I understand that article this morning, Congress is looking at and wants to do. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I do have a question concerning this amendment. After sitting on Judiciary the years that I have and listened to the discussion on eminent domain, it just seems to me that the amendment really does strengthens the ability to use eminent domain in the transmission line thing. And doing transmission lines, it strengthens that. If you leave it like it is, without the bill or without the amendment, everybody has a level playing field. You have to enter into the agreements. Yes, it takes longer, probably. Yes, probably it's not as efficient. But you're not boxing, particularly your private property owners, into a situation where, and it says you just have to... They just have to be entitled to have their say. Well, they'll have their say, and the next day they're moving across their land under eminent domain because it's been built right up to it because they haven't had a chance all along the line. Now, sometimes they use eminent domain anyway. But I don't know. That's the question I'm asking, particularly with this. I think you're strengthening in the building of power transmission lines, the ability to use eminent domain. And if we really do care about private property rights in this situation, and my feeling about the federal government, if they take it over, they take it over, and then all bets are off, and probably maybe no transmission lines will get built because of the big fight that will ensue. But anyway, I have that question. I think it makes it far easier to just step over private property rights.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. President, speaking for the amendment and for the bill, these are multi-billion-dollar projects, and they're going to come. I mean, we've got to make some choices about whether we're going to rely on foreign power or whether we're going to provide some for ourselves. If it's any comfort to those that worry about eminent domain, there's a major transmission line coming across Wyoming. And there's a little community of Fort Steele that have about 10 houses there. And they got anxious because they thought that this power line was going to come right through them. The power companies got together with the BLM permitting. And for those 10 people, they moved that line farther south, probably into a sage-grouse lek, but they did it anyway. This is not about squeezing little land. This is about major billion-dollar, and they're not going to build a line until they have it all permitted. I mean, we can get lost in this. We certainly can get lost in this. And I will tell you this. I worry about property rights, too, but I also worry about buying oil from that dingbat in Venezuela. And, you know, if we keep doing that, we're going to get in trouble. And these are the, it's either we're going to have these lines and we're going to power our own country, or we're going to buy it from people that don't like it, and that's where we are today. So it's not about squeezing little people. And I will tell you this, if you think about it, I would love to have a little property right in the middle of one of these transmission lines. That $5 an acre would be a $1 million deal when that billion-dollar company comes along, and that's the other side of it.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I have some reservations about this amendment. I do think that this amendment may make it more difficult for individuals to complain about location on power lines. And particularly, I call the Senate's attention to lines 35 and 36, where we're defining what line segment means. It means between certain tower or pole structures. It seems to me that that makes it very clear we're going to get the evil that we were talking about the other day, where they build right up to your property line, and then there really isn't much choice as to where they go next. And as I read item 2i on lines 19 through 22, there's an opportunity for hearing for the private property owners affected by the location of the segment. But I don't see the opportunity for you to say, wait a minute, if you build this segment, it's going to come right where it's going to cause me the most trouble in the next segment. And I really wonder, Mr. President, whether this amendment is improving the bill or making it a good deal more problematic than the original.
Anyone want to speak before the author of the amendment have his second term time? Senator Bebop, your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, to try to answer my colleague from Laramie County about eminent domain, this doesn't affect anything in the eminent domain statutes, and this body saw fit to change those a couple, 3 years ago and go from 30 days to 90 days. Whatever happens there, whether this bill ever passes or not, will be the same. It doesn't have any effect with eminent domain, at least that's my understanding. As to my tall colleague from Natrona County about little four under J, of course, have to understand that the rulemaking is carried on by our Public Service Commission relative to this. And if you look it back up before, if you have a complete EIS, which has to happen in a power line like this, you do a complete EIS because federal lands are involved, but you also have the private lands involved. So what we're trying to do here is ensure that every private landowner knows, in fact, that this is happening. And as this process works, they narrow a long corridor down to a 2 or 3 or 2 mile corridor, as I understand it, and we want all those people to know up front that this power line is coming, not to isolate it by segments, and that's what we're attempting to do with this amendment, is to ensure that all along the entire length of the line, people have an opportunity to know about it, be able to participate, and try to do and protect their private property rights.
The amendment sponsored have already had his second term. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make the first division lines 1 through 34 and the last division lines 35. I think it was a compulsive argument from the good senator from Natrona County that between certain tower or pole structures could be problematic. So I would ask that we would vote on the second part of it first and ask you to vote no on that division.
Senator, I'm checking. I'm wanting to say that the second division will not stand by itself.
Yeah, I think you're right. It won't, will it? Yeah, Mr. President, I agree with you.
My ruling will be that the second division will not stand by itself. The question is, shall third reading amendment number one to House Bill 288 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Are you ready for the question? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, rising in opposition to the bill, Mr. President, understand what this does. When one of those big power lines comes through and they plot it out, if you allow them to build up, for example, to the substation or to now the pole structure next to your land, you're not going to be able to move it. Where the eminent domain bill comes into play is under eminent domain. If I, as the landowner, can go in and say, do me the least harm, do me the least harm, that's the underlying principle. And when eminent domain comes, you go negotiate, you work through it, but I can protect my livelihood. With this, particularly one of these big power lines, it's not going to be the least harm. It's going to be from that pole, which may be on federal land, it may be on my neighbor's. They're going to go straight. And whether how much harm it does or doesn't do, I've lost all negotiating power. And that's the way it works. This is a bad bill. And what it amounts to is companies can do a segment, and then a segment, and then a segment. This amendment that we just passed, it's now part of the bill. What it guarantees is that you will be heard. Being heard in front of the PSC is no protection. It just means you get to go there and spout hot air. You have no rights. You have no standing. You have nothing. You get to shoot off. That's about it. Understand that this puts the surface owners, this entire bill puts the surface owners at an extreme disadvantage. I urge you to vote no on the bill.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, you know, it's a fine balance we have when we try to build transmission lines and protect private property owners. And no one has stood in front of this body more in favor of private property rights than I have. I really believe that by adding this language, we've gone a lot further. And I think you have more of an opportunity just to stand up and speak to it. I think you can have your voice heard. All the private property rights that you have are still in place. We haven't taken any of those away. What you're doing with the landowners, you're allowing them to understand what's happening with this entire segment so they can be up front and be able to establish their position and be able to argue it. The real answer, if you really want to stop these transmission lines, then you ought to have a bill that says we shall not build them in Wyoming. And that's an option that this body has. What we're trying to do is bring some compromise here that allows these power lines to be built in a way that's cost-effective. There's a complete EIS that everybody goes through. They're afforded the opportunity to hear that. They're afforded the opportunity to try to protect their private rights, and they still have the eminent domain statutes. I think this helps prevent private property right owners from losing those rights rather than if we didn't have this.
Senator Von Fledermann.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just standing on and for this bill. Understand this isn't just segments. They're not just getting a segment approved. The whole picture is there to begin with. The whole picture is narrowed down by the PSC and the power companies and really approved by the PSC. But if they get a segment completed as far as all the right-of-ways and access, that can be built. All they want to do is begin the construction. The whole project is presented first. It won't be a surprise to somebody to see a segment built up to their land, them never having known about this, and the PSC is not about to approve a segment that stands out by itself. The whole project's out there first.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill. You know, the bill has worked over years. It's always been that you shall get all your right-of-ways. And it was sort of a catch-22 for the power companies, I understand, because in order to have eminent domain, you need to have a certificate. And without the certificate, you can't, you need to get the certificate allow, or you need to get a certificate before you can actually construct. But the protection was is that for private landowners, there is eminent domain. They come in and they take your property. The EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, protects and really addresses federal issues. You can't, there's no eminent domain on state land. There's no eminent domain on the federal government land. So they've protected their rights. And the state would always does and would always and generally does have the interest to say, well, we would rather these lines be on private property where you can condemn. And this has traditionally been the only protection the private landowners have to say from the beginning, look, you got to consider me. It's a little more difficult. We've left in paragraph F to say that the commission may condition or may not condition it upon the right-of-ways. The commission's not there to protect the private property owners. They're there to help and aid the developer, which is the power or the transmission company. So now you have people that are trying to help transmission lines, and they don't have to consider at all the interest of the private property owners. And for those of you that live in this along these lines or you have constituents on, it's not very pleasant to have a home and about an acre of land and then find out that the transmission line goes right in front of you and you've no opportunity to complain and it's just there. And you know the commission is more interested about delivering power. They're not concerned about whether or not they just took your entire house. And believe me, you will not get compensated for the value of the house. You'll just live next to a power line. And you won't get the kind of values you are. And if you want experience, just go there. Eminent domain never gives you the value of your land when you cut it. It doesn't look at the value of the lost on either side of the property. This is just, you know, condemnation is an opportunity for these companies to go out and grab land and do it at economical prices. We need to have them, yes, but we don't need to take all the protection. We can leave some of the protection, and I tell you that this has taken all the protection in, and we've swung the pendulum from right to the left. It's not in the middle. It's gone from one side to the other.
Senator Bevout, for your second time.
Mr. President, for my second time, and my colleague that was on the amendment with me to try to, I think, do a little bit better job brings an excellent point, and I think we can correct that. This is a very important bill, private property rights. I would ask that this, without prejudice, this bill be laid back.
Without objections, House Bill 288 will be laid back. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Consideration of bills in general file.
Mr. President, if you would, I would yield to Senator Dockstetter for a moment.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Can I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, if I could just take a moment of your time and introduce you to a great-looking, above-average group of students in the lobby above us. They'd stand for just a moment. I'd like you to meet the Star Valley Middle School student government, student council class. I've made the 7-hour trip over to Cheyenne to watch the student government process. Would you welcome them to the Senate, please?
Welcome to the Senate. We hope it's worth the long drive. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor to answer a question?
You may.
Mr. President, I apologize. I should have done this in second reading. On House Bill 92, Long-Term Care Partnership Program, yesterday in Committee of the Whole, I was asked, was there an upper limit on the amount you could shield with this? And I said I thought there was in the federal regulations. Mr. President, it turns out upon investigation that there isn't. that they figure at the upper level, those people aren't going to be involved in Medicaid anyhow, and they didn't put an upper limit on it, so that information was erroneous, and that's the correction. Apologize for not catching it during second reading, Mr. President.
Majority floor leader.
Yes, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Von Platerman.
Okay, thank you. Committee of the Whole will come to order. Please come. First bill for our reading will be House Bill 215. Reading clerk will read.
House Bill number 215, sponsored by Representative Anderson, tax exemption for renewable resources, an act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Read the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 215, Tax Exemption for Renewable Resources. Now that I'm ready to go, this is a good bill. What this does is puts tax back on. Basically, what we're talking about is wind generation is what we're talking about here. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through the bill. What it does is we worked out a compromise with the wind generation companies to provide the incentive as it moves forward, but to allow those companies that are already either in place or already have their contracts signed to basically grandfather them if they are bona fide. In other words, if they have in the state of Wyoming the materials to go ahead and build their wind farm. And I think that compromise is critical to both the fairness issue and also still provide the incentive to go ahead with wind generation that's so important to this state. Mr. Chairman, going subparagraph N, starting on page 2, this is the sales tax on wind energy generation. We took out the repealer, and then we go over to the top of page 3, and this is the compromise. The exemption shall apply to equipment where the developer is the landowner prior to January 1st, 2010, and where the project developer has, on the same date, entered into a written contract with the landowner, including what he's going to place on there, has made payment under it, that the developer shall have received his permits and the approval from the government agency. In other words, those are the from DEQ and those folks, and that he'll submit evidence that he's got all of this in place. In other words, he's bona fide. He's really coming on board to the Department of Revenue. The equipment will be eligible for the exemption up until January 1st, 2010, shall be purchased and delivered within the state. In other words, it has a physical presence within the borders of the state. I think that's critical for those folks that are going forward, are already working to put up these wind farms. Subparagraph 2, again on the same date, January 1st, the exemption shall apply. What this does is takes out those little, and they're basically at-home wind generation units. They're limited to 25 kilowatts. The exemption will stay on them. We're trying to encourage people. These are the things you have out in the middle of the flower garden or in the garage or wherever it's going to be. We still want to encourage those. It's more the private, to take care of a private home or something of that nature. Again, we follow the same language over on page 5 where we go in. One is sales tax and one is use tax. Mr. Chairman, I think this is a reasonable compromise. It does generate the revenue we need, but it also encourages the development of clean energy, which is something this state needs to cultivate if we're going to export energy to our neighbors, particularly to the west, that have high standards. Well, and to the south, too. They've got standards down there on what we can deliver in terms of the energy mix. I think it is a good compromise, and I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on House Bill 215. Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 215, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. House Bill 215 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our reading is House Bill 39. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 39, sponsored by the Local Government Committee, Population Determinations, Use of Federal Census, and Act Relating to Administration of Government. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 39. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk please read it in?
House Bill number 39, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 15.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move standing committee amendment to House Bill 39. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment removes from a portion of the bill. Basically, this is a bill to get everybody on the same fiscal year, but there's one area that is too important to mess with. Or not the fiscal year. It's the same population determination of the census. That was another bill, Mr. Chairman. But there is one area of law that is just too important, and the population projections are just too significant that we can't mess with it, and that's the area of liquor licenses, Mr. Chairman. So what this bill goes into is page 8, lines 13 through 22, and the amendment removes that from the bill, and that's where the population requirements for liquor licenses. It just says we're going to keep doing it the same way we do it now and allows kind of towns to do this mid-census estimates to administer and to expand or contract the number of liquor licenses in between the decennial censuses. So that's all that the amendment does, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to discuss it, and I'd call for the question.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, just for discussion, I mean, the purpose of the bill was to get everybody on the same page, get everybody thinking about the same things. And while I understand, I mean, I suppose if your population is going up, you want to have more licenses, but it seems like we're giving them more license all the time anyway. They just come in and ask for a number increase. So I wonder if that's the way to give them more licenses, is to give them more as opposed to trying to have a different definition in one different section. So just some discussion on that.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there was a discussion, as you can imagine, we did hear from municipalities about this issue. It's a very significant thing, you know, with the U.S. Constitution, the repeal of prohibition, giving states control of liquor, and the fact that we are a control state and we delegate the responsibility to local licensing authorities. It's a very critical issue in these towns. And people watch as the population creeps up to the next level where another license can be established. Investors make plans. They come in and, you know, they pay for the population estimates to be made to allow for the
provision of additional liquor licenses. So seems to be working pretty good. We haven't actually had any complaints about it. It is true that we have expanded the number of liquor licenses throughout. Actually, what we've done is expanded the types of liquor licenses, not so much the number available of traditional licenses per population basis. And I guess you also should remember that if a town doesn't want to issue a liquor license, they don't have to. It's kind of a voluntary in that aspect. And, Mr. Chairman, liquor is just one of those things that towns seem to be doing a very good job of administrating, and we don't probably need to fool with it in this area. And the committee was persuaded that we should remove this from the bill. And have I talked you to death yet? Economic development, Mr. Chairman.
And it's for the children. Further discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, you ready for the question? Are you ready? All those in favor of Senator Kidd's motion to adopt Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 39, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill, the amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Further discussion, Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would yield to the Senate Chairman of the Select Committee on Local Government Financing, Senator Schiffer.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, this bill did come from the Select Committee on Local Government Financing. And the reason we get into this, we had a number of different ways to determine how many people lived in each political subdivision. It varied a great deal. When we start allocating, and we do, Mr. Chairman will recall, in the present budget we're under, there's a tremendous amount of money that's at stake as it flows to where either a formula that has population as its basis or its divisor or divisee or any of those things. So it's important. The idea behind this is we've got to make some sort of semblance of consistency across the board. And with the last standing committee amendment, I think we strengthened the bill considerably, even if we watered it down. Let me walk through this, and we will hit a number of different areas where we went through, where it made a reference to census. What we're doing is the last federal census. That's what we're going to go by. We had to change some language to get all references in the statute to the last federal census. We start out, and I'll walk through these very rapidly, crime victim services. We're going to the last sentence for those guys. Investment of surplus money. And you'll see, as shown by the next preceding federal census, words like that crop up all over. Census was defined in many, many different ways. The public defender over on page 4. When we go through definitions, here we are. This is nuts and bolts stuff. The last federal census means the last official federal decennial census has conducted and officially corrected by the Bureau of Census, including any changes for boundary modifications, to become effective on July 1st, next following the receipt of the census figures. That's it. That's what we're going to. And it standardizes it all the way through. On page 5, again, 94601, distribution of funds to cities and counties and bonus payments. We're talking about the percentages, and we had to correct language over on page 7, lines 14 to 16, to make sure we got consistency there. Over on page 8, we deleted that. That's the standing committee amendment. Territories which may incorporate. This is how cities grow and become. Become cities and become towns in our state. Positions and salaries over on page 10, 15, 4, 202, same definition as used earlier. Civil service commissions, and as we start looking at fire districts and how we employ firemen, classification of positions over on page 12. Remember, that's the small towns under 4,000 people. We got to count them accurately and consistently statewide. Pensions, again, for those smaller towns, less than 4,000 people. over on the bottom of page 11. Now we're going to talk about who can go for city managers and different types of government. And this is very typical. The seven of them that have 4,000, the old language was according to the last preceding United States Census. We're saying you've got to do it consistently. A resort area, we cleaned that up. The boards of trustees, that's, again, for your school districts, trying to get some consistency in how those folks are picked, vacancies and things like that. Over on the bottom of page 17, we even went to representation at conventions, and we've got that lined out, and so on and so forth. Mr. Chairman, quite frankly, I could go through all these, but really what it does, we're going to the last federal census, and we're cleaning up the language and making consistent. I'd be happy to answer any questions and ask for your favorable response.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. Senator Larson.
Refer you to page 5, line 15. Subdivision shall be determined by resort to the last federal census. I don't know if there's something left out, or can you tell me what that means, or the way the sentence is written? And secondly, when you get over to page 14, in your definitions, as used in this act, starting on line 14, page 14, as used in this act, resort area means an area has a population less than 500. If they've not incorporated, what does it matter what the population is? I wonder if you could address that.
Senator Schiffer?
Yes. On page 5, the 15, line 15, by resort to, what that means is that we're going to rely on the last federal census for the population of a city, town, county, legislative district, or political subdivision. And again, this is the guts of the bill. There's all sorts of ways to define population or change population or count people. And what we're saying is we're going to use the federal census to do it. Resort is kind of a unique word, but I think it's appropriate since that's what LSO wrote there. And I'm all for LSO. Over on page 14... I'm trying to remember exactly where we were dealing with a resort area. It's odd that should come up. I'll have to do some research into that. Mr. Chairman, I forget just what we were doing to resort areas, but I'm sure we were doing it well.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question of the sponsor, and we had a situation in Fremont County about a year ago where the federal people that involved the census were going to take the information from Fremont County and not let the Fremont County Commissioner see it or the County Commissioner see it, as was normally the process. And I'm wondering if you got into that issue in this and so that the counties would actually be able to see that, or if you've had an opportunity to see how that this interrelates with that federal move to take away the census information, not give it to the county commissioners, and then would go directly to the Washington.
Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, we didn't get into that. That's the first I've heard that they wouldn't disclose it. I mean, I know always before they did disclose it. Whether that's a new shift in the new administration, I don't know. We didn't bump into that at all.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises, to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 39, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 39 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 281. Would the reading clerk please read it in?
House Bill 281, sponsored by Representative Landon, Telemedicine State System, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 281 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment, and I will explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, this relates to the establishment and use of telemedicine in the state of Wyoming. That's something that which over the years there's been a good deal of enthusiasm for, because it is an obvious solution to our very rural nature, where in some of the remote areas we simply do not have the number of medical specialists that we might need because there aren't enough people to support them. And this is a way for those services to get out into those rural areas. There's been quite a bit of work already done getting hospitals tied into a system, getting the physical infrastructure in place, and that sort of thing. And they're ready to go to the next step and start realizing some of the benefits. They're already doing a number of things, some in the psychiatry area, some in the radiology area, a number of things. What this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is right now the Office of Rural Health is charged with this, and they had been doing things in cooperations with the Telecommunication Council. The information we have is that has ceased to meet, and the issues it dealt with were more of the physical infrastructure, and they're getting solved. There's an authorization for really convening a consortium. That's not as earth-shaking as it might be. The testimony we had in committee was this consortium has been operating on an informal basis for at least a year. And what's happening is the Attorney General is getting nervous that the things they're doing are going beyond their statutory authority. So, Mr. Chairman, it hasn't reached the formal stage of a dumb Attorney General's opinion yet. It's merely advice that they need some authority. And so what authority is there here? There's the authority at the bottom of page 2 to convene it, to include in it the Director of Department of Health and the Wyoming Chief Information Officer, a bunch of language about coordinating things. On page 3, there's language that they're going to educate the users. They've got to conform with the state and federal privacy and security laws. The federal ones are considerable. The HIPAA in this area, there are ways of dealing with them, but they are things you have to pay attention to. Gives the state chief information officer some authority on information security programs. An important provision on page 3, line 11, where they'll have the authority to seek funds. The testimony is this consortium on the private side is getting private funds from potential users, and that the federal grants that are out there, Mr. Chairman, this authority could become very important if the federal grants have to go to a governmental agency. And then on the next section at the bottom of page 3, and then over again on the following section, the chief information officer is given the authority for rules and regulations in the first case to implement, promote, facilitate voluntary exchange of secure telemedicine, telehealth network. You may well need some formal regulations to govern that, make sure it stays secure, make sure everybody uses the same protocols. And again, same thought, promote a common direction for state interoperable telemedicine telehealth network in conformity with the rules and regulations adopted by the Chief State Information Officer. And that, in all candor, is probably where they need the formal authority and why they're getting advice from their Attorney General that they need a statutory basis for what they need to do. If you're going to do one of these successfully, you have to have some interoperability standards so everybody gets on the same page. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and then there is a Committee of the Whole amendment.
Will the reading clerk please read in the Committee of the Whole?
House Bill 281, Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1, due in gross copy, page 2, line 7.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of this Committee of the Whole amendment. Mr. Chairman, this corrects one illiteracy that the LSO found for us where we use singular and should have used a plural. Urge its adoption.
Okay, we're on the amendment. All ready for the question. All in favor of Senator Scott's motion to, on the Committee of the Whole Number 1 amendment to House Bill 281, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. House Bill 281.
Answer any questions, and if there are none, I call for the question.
Okay, any further discussion on House Bill 281? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion, the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 281. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 281 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 173.
Okay.
House Bill number 173, sponsored by Representative McKim, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program, and Act relating to the Wyoming Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. It was referred to Committee number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCarrier, Massey, Von Platerin. No, Senator Jennings, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Chairman, move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 173, and for an explanation of the bill, defer to Senator DeCarrier.
Senator DeCarrier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 173 builds upon an existing program that we implemented a couple of years ago to try to address the teacher shortage in some areas. Those were in math, science, special education. Mr. Chairman, the program has shown some good results up to this point. One of the measures of that, Mr. Chairman, are what they call exception authorizations that are from the Professional Teaching Standards Board, and they have actually seen somewhat of a decrease in those exception authorizations. I guess I should talk a little more about that. An exception authorization is an exception to allow a teacher to teach in an area that they are not highly qualified in. And so sometimes they give them an exception authorization because you can't find the teacher, you know, or for other reasons. And so we've seen a decrease in those authorizations, and so that has helped as far as how this program has worked as far as lowering the shortage. Mr. Chairman, what this bill would do would just be to add a couple of additional criteria for that, and those two would be the certification, and again, these wouldn't be a total degree. These are certifications that are added on to somebody that already is certified as a teacher, and those endorsements would be in the ESL area, English as a second language, and in reading endorsements. Mr. Chairman, these are a couple areas that are very high need in a lot of school districts. They're having a hard time finding people with these certifications and qualifications in order to fill these positions in school districts. And so this would allow for a way to entice people who are already certified in the teaching profession to go back and, if they so desire, to obtain one of these endorsements, and it would allow them a mechanism in order to pay off the cost of getting that endorsement. Mr. Chairman, in order to pay that back, they would agree to, you know, to teach in that district at least half time in the areas that the certification was obtained for. For example, they would either have to be half time in the ESL area or in the reading area as far as using these endorsements. If they did that, Mr. Chairman, What would happen is the loans would be paid back over that amount of time, and so they are making a time commitment to the district in order to get this loan repaid. Mr. Chairman, there is currently money available in this. That's why you don't see a fiscal note. There is no additional need for money in this. The program has the funds in order to expand out into these additional areas and pick up, again, these endorsements, Mr. Chairman, because, again, they are, you know, of a limited nature as far as that. They're adding additional hours. An ESL endorsement, Mr. Chairman, requires 15 credit hours, and a reading is 18 credit hours in order to pick up those endorsements. Mr. Chairman, both the University of Wyoming College of Education and the Professional Teaching Standards Board are in favor of this proposal. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to stand for questions and urge the body's favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on House Bill 173. Seeing none, you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 173, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 173 has passed the Committee of the Whole. And Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the next bill, in order to present that without interruption, I'm going to move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
Heard the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Mr. President, this is yours. Oh. What did I do wrong?
Reports from standing committees.
February the 24th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 69, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCarrier, Jennings, and Massey. No, Senator Von Fladern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
House Bill 69 just read in has an appropriations to it. I'd like to request it be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Without objection, House Bill 69 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
February the 24th, 2009, Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 174, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCarrier, Massey, Von Fladern. No, Senator Jennings, Senator Co-Chairman.
Signing of unrolled acts. We are that order of business, signing unrolled acts, unrolled act number 30.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 30 being original Senate File 8.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 30 being original Senate File Number 8. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 31.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 31 being original Senate File 86.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 31 being original Senate File Number 86. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 32.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 32 being original Senate File 69.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 32 being original Senate File Number 69. That's so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 33.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 33 being original Senate File 73.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act numbers 33, being original Senate file number 73. I've so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be at recess until 1:45. 1:45.
Announcement. Senator Burns.
Your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 12:15 up in S-14 to discuss interim topics and also the governor's appointments. So would members of the committee please bring their collection of gubernatorial appointments so we can discuss it.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Select Committee on Tribal Relations will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in S-19, that's the Senate Corporations Room, to discuss interim topics. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Two announcements. Conference Committee on Message Number 315, Senate File 111, will meet at noon up in S-18. And further, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet 30 minutes after the noon recess on tomorrow to discuss House Bill 239 engrossed Bighorn Basin Discovery Center and to discuss possible interim topics.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, we'll meet at the noon recess tomorrow in S1 to consider interim topics. And Mr. President, if I may have privilege of the floor, tomorrow also the Wyoming State Archives will be selling the blue books again in the rotunda, and urge you to take this one last opportunity to purchase them.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, Committee Number 3, Revenue, will meet at 12:15 up in S-16 to take up House Bill 184, Engrossed Mineral Taxes, Audit, and Refund, House Bill 244, Engrossed Uncompensated Trauma Care, and House Bill 234, Engrossed Property Tax Assessed Value, and will initiate discussions on interim work.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Conference Committee on House Bill 11, Dogs Chasing Wildlife, will be meeting in room H-18 upon adjournment of the House and Senate. And please note this is room change from the previous announcement, H-18, for House Bill 11. Thank you.
You've heard the motion that the Senate shall stand recess until 1:45 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are recessed.